Here they come.
Yes, welcome to Animal Voices. It is a Thanksgiving weekend, this long weekend. It's going to be a wonderful, bright, sunny weekend for everybody to enjoy this weekend. As you gather this weekend with your friends and family, I hope that you will find much for which to be thankful for. Thank you, Co-op Radio, and those who listen to Animal Voices. Let us, at this time of feasting on nature's bounty, remember millions of poor, deprived, and oppressed peoples everywhere and our government's role in their condition. Well, there's a wonderful place called Farm Sanctuary in back east and also in California. Farm Sanctuary, what they have done is they have rescued over 1,000 turkeys. Many of the turkeys were abandoned when they were sick or injured. Some of them were saved from transport disasters. Thousands of visitors have been to Farm Sanctuary and have seen that turkeys are unique individuals with distinct personalities and feelings. Just like other animals, one visitor remarked, "Turkeys remember your face and they will sit closer to you each day you revisit." Another visitor told us how she learned to scratch a turkey. "I have scratched dog ears and cow's backs and a host of other animals, but I never dreamed a bird, let alone a domestic turkey, would ask for a belly rub." Like dogs and cats, turkeys are very affectionate and compassionate. You are listening to Animal Voices, coming to you on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, 102.7 FM in Vancouver. And this is a non-commercial, cooperatively owned, listener-supported community radio station. Located in the heart of Vancouver's downtown east side, Co-op Radio. It is a voice for the voiceless that strives to provide space for underrepresented and marginalized communities. Alan Jensen, thank you for being our technician. My name is Carl Loskin. In the studio today we have co-host Marge Adams. Marge, you have, well, I'll just go over what we'll be having in the program today. This is, we'll be speaking with Melissa from the World Society for the Protection of Animals in Toronto. And she's the spokesperson for a wonderful web page called Vote for Animals. That's WSPA.voteforanimals. So, Marge, you have a few announcements.
Yes, I do. I don't really want me to give them right now or not, but they are important. Sorry. They are important announcements and rather exciting. So that I'm looking forward to giving those whenever you want me to, Carl.
Okay. Well, you know, we are so privileged to have a very special in-studio guest, and he's been here before. His name is Conrad Schmidt. Conrad, such a powerful name, you know, Heart of Darkness. And you're the author of, Conrad, you're the author of a book called
Workers of the World, Relax.
Yes, you know, I'm getting those vibes now, and now that you came in
at feel it.
1 minute after 12 o'clock, tell us, what's in this book and why is it so popular?
Well, first I want to say thank you so much for having me on my show, and I always love being on this show. Carl, you put on a great show, and I always love to hear about your adventures farming different things in your garden and going mushroom picking and all the great things that you do. And yeah, I wrote a book called Workers of the World, Relax. And something I find which is so interesting is one of the topics I deal with is past recessions and depressions. What are the fundamentals behind these things? Today in the news you hear the credit crunch, there's a world economic crisis, and even the politicians are going and they're yelling, panic, panic, panic. But they're also saying at the same time, the fundamentals of the economy are still strong. Which makes, so why is this all happening? Oh, people are just afraid. It's the credit crunch. But what isn't making it into the news is what is the cause. They say that the collapse of the stock exchange is the cause of the credit crunch. But what caused the credit crunch? Why was it that we lent billions and billions of dollars to people across the world who couldn't afford it? Why were we propping up an economy that was slowing down 20 years ago? Basically, what we have is a delayed consequence. 20 years ago, things were slowing down. Said, how do we prop up the system? Well, we'll give them cheap money, and that'll keep the system going. Well, that worked for a while, but...
You know, Conrad, money creation, I think you're talking about that now. And we always used to say that they got the printing presses going again to get the economy going, especially at a time just before elections. Mm-hmm. They want to be looking really smart, especially the party that's in power. And, of course, but now I believe it's not the printing presses anymore. It's just a book entry. I mean, mm-hmm. what does it really mean to the whole setup when so much has been mismanaged and we've created out of nothing book entries with no proper backing? What do you hold of that?
Well, I think something that's really critical this time is a historical analysis. Believe it or not, this is not the first depression or recession. It's happened before. What causes these things? And this is an important topic that hasn't made it into the news. Like, what caused the Great Depression? Well, what happened was before in the early part of the 20th century, you had all these new fantastic technological revolutions, the combustion and wireless communication, new production techniques. And what it did was it made us more efficient. We could produce more goods and services with less labor. Now, that's what technology does. It creates this concept of surplus labor. We can produce so much more with less labor. Unless we consume more, we land up in a problem where we have surplus labor and people lose their job. Now, that's what caused the Great Depression. And I've got tons of video footage of Roosevelt talking about this, Henry Ford talking about this. It was a very well-known concept. So what happens after that is we have this consumer culture, and we try and balance this equation. We consume more. The more technologically efficient we become, the more we have to consume, the more wasteful society has to become to match that equation. But we now have reached the point where we aren't able to keep up, and we are creating again in the system surplus labor. Now, that's the fundamental reason why we have a slowdown in the economy. So how did they manage to overcome that? Well, what they did was they borrowed money, and they pumped it into the system. As Carl said, just journals and just numbers in a book. It didn't really reflect what was happening. So we have a delayed consequence. We've managed to hide the underlying fundamental problems for a while now. And there are many economists in the world that are talking about this, and professors. But it's not getting into the mainstream media. And I mean, Kennedy used to talk about this. Roosevelt used to talk about this. So many people.
Now, there was another theory that you explained always very well. It's called the Jevons paradox.
Mm-hmm.
So this is all we've gone through. You explained how the technology breakthrough happened in the 1920s and 30s with mm-hmm. Steam engine and combustion engine. But we've gone through that same revolution now. Mm-hmm. And what is the Jevons paradox?
The Jevons paradox is interesting. It's more of an environmental topic. You see, a lot of environmentalists, you have this green business movement that says, well, we'll come up with new green technologies that will allow us to continue spending and consuming. But green technology doesn't really solve anything. You see, let me give you an example. Now, what the Jevons paradox is saying is that the more efficient an energy source comes, the more wasteful we'll land up being. Like, here's an example. Coal was more efficient than wood, and technically it released more emissions than coal. But because it was more efficient, we were able to use more of it, and industry grew. You see, oddly enough, the greener a technology is, the bigger the ecological footprint. It goes in reverse to what you would think it was. The more efficient and greener, it allows us to consume more and expand our ecological footprint. And that's the Jevons paradox. You see, we think we can use green technology by becoming more efficient, and that's going to solve our problems. But it doesn't, because the more efficient we become, the more we expand, the more energy efficient it is, the bigger our ecological footprint can become.
So new cars are said to be more efficient. You get more miles per gallon with your nice new little car, right?
Exactly. Like that's what happened in the 1970s when the price of oil went up, and an American Congress said, "Oh, the price of oil is going up. We have to use less oil." Sound familiar? So they passed this law. It was the CAFE standard, where the engine efficiency was mandated at all cars had to be 20% more efficient. And I thought, wow, consumption's going to go down by 20% because we're more efficient. Well, no, the reverse happened. Consumption went up because people now had to buy new cars because they had to buy the new, more efficient cars. And that's all an energy cost. And they could travel more and further because it was more efficient. And they now had to build more roads because people were traveling further. So the ecological footprint got bigger, and they were confused. Why are we using more energy? Why is everything getting bigger when we're passing these laws? You see, it goes in reverse. That's the real, real challenge to the environmental movement, is that Mother Nature has a little bit of a twist in there, and it's called the Jevons paradox.
Now, combined with the Jevons paradox, people consuming more as technology advanced, we've also seen in the last 40, 50 years this incredible explosion of population in Asia and everywhere in the world. So that compounds the amount of resources and finite resources that we're consuming.
Yes, but there is a bit of a twist in it, is why is population increasing? And what we have learnt is that in places where women have more rights, where women can become more involved in community, become teachers, can decide for themselves how many children they want, that you have a stabilized or a declining population. The problem, population growth, is not so much that we want to, it's more a rights issue. You see, in countries where men are in patriarchal societies, where the role of women is just to breed, which is indeed a very sad reflection, but it is in those countries that you have the higher population growth. When people have rights, it changes.
Right. And now in your book also, you talk about being consumers, and with your vision of being working less, it's wonderful for the environment. Work less and it's wonderful for the environment. Maybe you can explain that.
That's the underlying thing. The only part that you can really adjust in this equation is how we view work. Currently, the way we look at work is we head off to offices and factories and we make this huge amount of consumer goods that just land up in landfills polluting the planet. And people are not doing the important work of music, art, family, culture. This essential work that is critical to creating a healthier society and has a reduced ecological footprint. We even use the word work only to talk about making stuff. That's not true. Work is an ongoing process. It's not just the work you get paid for that counts. It's the work you do in your life. It's about the friends you make. It's about the neighbors you know. It's about the community you build. It's about the gardens you plant. It's about the books that you read. It's about the issues you stand up. It's about the politicians you hold accountable. It's about what you do with your life. And that is the whole, that is the underlying issue, is that our focus on work is that we get paid, we make junk, goes in a landfill. No, that's a waste of time. You're not doing the critical work. Music, art, family, culture, reduced ecological footprint, good for people.
Now, what you're really talking about is a dramatic paradigm shift in values. And talking about values, It's I would like to reflect on the situation, because our whole program today is going to be about elections and what the issues are and what's in the Georgia Strait today. So the recession and the meltdown, which you talked about in the beginning, will impair many countries to wage war all over the world. So there is always some, you know, there's always a balancing act here. But what do you see the changing values that we need to do it? Do we need a severe recession or depression to make us think of where we are and establish real values, like you're talking about the arts and culture?
Yes, I think the recession and the slowing down of the economy is something that's good. It's something that's critical to get people to start asking questions again. Even though we've had this fantastic economic growth, people have not really benefited. One in six people are now living in slums in the world. What we do, exactly as you said, Carl, it gives us an opportunity to look into, start researching, finding out. Because I have a saying, people lead, politicians follow. And the only thing that can change things is not politics, but people becoming empowered. And that's one of the things that a reduced work week does, is that it enables people to start finding out the issues, getting involved in community, reading books. And that's the real power in a reduced work week. And in countries that do have a reduced work week, you see countries that have more time for social justice issues. You have, you have bigger protests. You have people that are willing to have the time to research and hold politicians accountable. In our rushed world, people don't have that time anymore. You're either starving on the street or you're overworked. That middle ground of thinking is gone, and that's the real power that we need to take back.
Now, the Workless Party, and you're quite involved with the Workless Party, is it?
Indeed I am.
Work I started, less, consume less?
Live more. I started it 5 years ago.
Love it.
Yeah.
I started it 5 years ago to get these ideas out there. The idea is not to win elections, but to put out ideas that make sense. We make documentary films. We focus on community. We do theater events, documentary films, write books, forums. And that's, I think, the most important thing about the Workless Party. It's not so much a political party. It's about community. And oddly enough, I was just thinking about it. We, from all our fundraisers that we do, we take the money and we give it back to the community. All the other political parties give us money, and they'll spend it on a Jimmy Patterson board or a glossy ad in a newspaper. We don't do that. We're more about community, and that's our focus.
So what kind of community event you're actually having one tonight, so let's broadcast it.
Yeah, we do a lot of events. Tonight we're doing something called East Vanity. It's the first time we're doing this event, so we're still figuring out what it is, what's its personality. And I find that whenever you're in a new venue, you have to let that venue speak what works there. And it's going to be at the Granville Legion, 2205 Commercial Drive. We've got a great lineup, DJ Coria. We've got Booty Burlesque. We've got Blackberry Wood. We've got Timothy Wisdom. We've got a great lineup. We've got Eastbliff. And yeah, we'll be doing lots of things. And as usual, whatever money we raise will go back to some community project.
So where and when and what time?
It starts at 8 o'clock and it's tonight. Come in costume. There'll be prizes for the craziest, wackiest outfit. The theme is vanity. I'm not too sure what vanity looks like, but that's the theme. Jessica Robert came up with that idea.
So, Alan, you have a question.
Oh, I was just reflecting on what you were talking about a minute ago, about the changes, social changes that have happened that have led to the economic problems we have now. And the concept of working less certainly makes a lot of sense to me.
Yes.
But what's happened in the last, say, going back 20 years was deregulation. And this allowed the banking and economic sectors and other corporate sectors to manipulate markets in a way they'd never been able to before, and this has forced up prices. So we just have to look at what's happened in real estate. And part of the big economic problem now has to do with mortgages and real estate in the United States, and the price has been going up and up. And this forces people into serious economic situations if they want to have a house or if they want to buy many products. So they think they have to work more to keep up with these prices because the market's being manipulated. Real estate agents are flipping properties and pushing prices up. The banks are manipulating the mortgages and bundling mortgages and then selling those bundles off to other people, and the prices are going up, and individuals are finding the cost of housing going up and up.
Okay, now there were two things there that I'd like to talk about. One was the idea of the fundamentals. Now, what you were saying over there, we were again talking about banking, that this was a problem with the banking system. No, it goes a lot deeper than that. It has over 100 years of history. You see, at the end of the day, the credit crunch was money that was put into the system to keep the system going. We had fundamentals that were way, way, way beyond just a banking issue that were being ignored. They weren't able to solve the fundamental problems. That's why they started pumping money. It's not so much about banks. This is about fundamentals in the economy and the history of it. Now, the next one is interesting. Exactly as you said, people think that, oh, there's a crisis, I have to work more to survive. Again, it's a paradox. It goes the other way. And this is what Kennedy and Roosevelt and Ford were saying. You see, when you have a surplus labor in the system, one of the things you have two choices. One is you have high unemployment and a large percentage of the population suffer. But that doesn't work because it all just filters through and you have a mess. What you do when you have surplus labor in the system is you share the work. That's what Roosevelt said. That's what Ford said. That's what John Kennedy said. And that's the idea.
Well, thank you, Conrad. Well, we're speaking with Conrad Schmidt, author of Workers of the World, Relax. And you're listening to Animal Voices coming to you on CFRO 102.7 FM in Vancouver. And we are doing a very special program today because of the elections coming up the following week. Hope everybody can see the headlines of the Georgia Strait. And it says, the stakes are high and we're urging people to vote for the candidate with the best chance of defeating Stephen Harper in your riding. So that's strategic voting. We'll be discussing that with Conrad after this, but we do have Melissa on the line, and she's the spokesperson for the World Society for the Protection of Animals, WSPA.ca, and they have put together a most timely web page called Vote for the Animals. Welcome to Animal Voices, Melissa.
Thank you.
Well, you know, maybe you can just give us a rundown of your what you did to make your web page so interesting, because there's so much information there.
Sure. Well, the best time to let politicians know that animal welfare matters to you is, of course, during an election, on voting day, and as well during the days leading up to that important day. And it's a great chance to get the ear of the political candidates and hopefully force some commitments and show them that while animal welfare issues are not a top election debate issue, they're very important to many people, and it's something they should consider when they're campaigning and knocking on people's doors. So we surveyed all the party leaders, including the Green Party, so the five parties and the Bloc as well. And we asked them some personal questions about animals, whether animals matter to them personally, and if they've learned anything from a pet or another animal, if they could share some memorable experiences that involved an animal. And we did ask one rather silly question: if animals could vote, what party would they vote for and why? We thought that was a nice general question
right.
to allow them to use their creativity to tell us why they would naturally vote for their party, as most people responded that way. And then we asked them some serious questions about their positions on some key federal animal welfare and animal cruelty issues. And so those are all available for people to review on voteforanimals.ca. And people can also send a letter to their electoral candidates directly from our website. They just have to type in their postal code, and there's a template letter for them, but we encourage everyone to personalize it and ask the candidates any question that matters most to them.
Now, Melissa, you sent this to the leaders of all of the major political parties in
Yes.
Canada. So maybe we're very curious to know what their response was.
Absolutely. Well, there were a number of questions that we asked, so it's hard to summarize. I do encourage people to go to the website. But I'll say that the Green Party probably responded the strongest in terms of advocating for greater protection for animals. And that's probably not a surprise to many of the listeners. They do support strengthening animal cruelty provisions under the criminal code, for instance. They actually mentioned in their response that they recognize animals as sentient beings. That's hardly anything radical of a concept for most listeners, but for political party leaders, it's something that takes some work in getting them to actually say that. The Green Party also had a very precise policy to decrease the transport of animals to slaughter, and that's something our organization and many other groups across Canada have been campaigning for because of the sheer stress that these animals face. Obviously, their experiences on the farm and at the slaughterhouse are difficult to imagine, but the journey there is often a long, grueling one. So the Green Party actually mentioned that they would ban live animal exports and ban the use of electric prods, and they would cap the distance that animals are forced to travel to slaughter to 8 hours or 500 kilometers. And they mentioned various other things, but they had a lot of details in their response. Some of the other parties, particularly the Liberal and the NDP party, spoke mostly about their relationship to animals, to wild animals, and their view of their appreciation for the natural world and their focus in this election on environmental issues. And I have to say that we started this campaign because we know that the environmental movement has taken great strides forward to make the environment an election issue. There was some time ago where it was a fringe issue, and it's great to see it as a priority issue this election debate. And my only hope is that if we keep at this and keep making animals matter during the election, that we'll one day see animal welfare as a top issue during the debate. So they focus mostly on an environmental perspective, but we did ask the parties about whether they would strengthen amendments to the criminal code for animal cruelty. The Liberals were pretty vague in their answer. They said this is something they would consider. I was hoping that the party leader would commit to bringing forward his own Member of Parliament, Mark Collins, private member's bill to strengthen the criminal code, but that was not mentioned in the response. The NDP party, on the other hand, did commit to strengthening the animal cruelty provisions, and their response showed that they understand that there are many loopholes and in archaic language in our current 1892 animal cruelty law.
Now, what about the Bloc?
The Bloc was very interesting. They also had a very detailed response to our question about the transport of farm animals. The Bloc took it from a food sovereignty issue, so they were going with the angle of promoting local food production, and that does indeed decrease the distance that farm animals are transported to get from the farm to the person's table. But they did mention that treatment of agricultural animals is an ongoing concern for their party, and the leader, Mr. Duceppe, mentioned that he has heard from a lot of people concerned about this issue, particularly in response to a report that was on a Quebec Public Affairs program exposing the cruel treatment of farm animals in Quebec. He took it from two standpoints. First, we need to penalize people who are cruel to farm animals by updating our criminal code. Second approach is preventative, and that's where he focused on the food sovereignty issue and focusing on increasing local slaughter capacity, local food production and consumption through regional development. So he had a very thorough response, whereas I would say the Liberal and NDP parties didn't have such details. When we asked them whether they would support a universal declaration on animal welfare, they said it sounds interesting, but they would have to reconsider. In all fairness, that if it's an issue they've never heard of before, it's only responsible that it's something they could say it sounds progressive, sounds like something they could support, but they would have to speak speak to their members in caucus and decide on it. The Greens and the Bloc did provide a number of detailed responses to our questions.
Now, did the Conservative Party reply go any further than acknowledging that the leader knew everything about animals because he had his cat?
We were hoping that Mr. Harper would have responded to our survey because we know that he's involved in providing a home for stray cats, and I know his many people know his wife is very involved with the Ottawa Humane Society, but shockingly, no, he did not respond at all. We didn't receive any response after repeated tries. I pretty much harassed all of these party war rooms repeatedly because I knew this isn't an issue that they're that's on the top of the pile to respond to. So it took a lot of work, but we were happy to get responses from the other parties, but unfortunately no response at all from the Conservative Party.
Now, Melissa, we're speaking with Melissa from the World Society for the Protection of Animals, WSPA.ca, and of course VoteForAnimals.ca, is that correct?
That's right.
VoteForAnimals.ca. But I received this past week, I received your newsletter, Sanctuary for Chimps, wonderful articles in there, the Protecting the World Strays, and Bears Find Refuge in Romania, Canada's First Nations Dogs, I haven't read that, and then WSPA and the Body Shop Make Animals Matter. But there's also many other things in this article, Vote for Animals, that we can do in the last few days before the election to make the voice of animals heard. And it's on your page there, recommendations on what to do other than, you know, getting notes, speaking at all candidates' debates and stuff like that.
Very important. We basically, again, as I mentioned before, how the environmental movement is the best example. They've taken great strides to make environmental issues a key top election debate, so much that it's actually in the party's platform, or at least in some of their platforms. And the only way we can make animal welfare and animal protection a platform issue is by constantly reminding candidates when they come knocking on your door at the all candidates debates. Even the local newspaper is aware that this is an issue too. We've heard so much about health care and the economy and environmental sustainability, and of course those are all very important. But what about these other issues? And I think when we ask the candidates questions about their concern for animal welfare and improving it, sometimes you really get a better read of who these people are as people, not as politicians. We often stereotype what a politician is, but what's their character? Can we learn anything from their interest in this issue? And I think you can. And as well, I would stress to the political strategists that a lot of people who are concerned about animal welfare are, our typical donor base, for instance, is middle-aged women, and mostly the soccer moms. And you don't mess with soccer moms. They're very dedicated to their cause. They do consider issues like this when they vote, and they're typically a swing voter. They cross all party lines. And this election is very close. The polls are making it closer. In some ridings, it's a matter of a few votes. And an issue like this, if the candidate comes strong on an issue like this, it really could make or break their victory on election day.
Now, Melissa, I took your recommendation to go to all candidates' meetings, and I went to one on Wednesday, and I went to one last night in our area. And we had to fill out a little blank piece of paper. They didn't have microphones anymore.
Oh.
So you write out on what your question is. And so I submitted one on, and nobody would know if I submit more than one, you know.
Good for you.
So I submitted one on animals and one on animals
again,
and one, you know, animals in the time of war is something that is so disastrous. They need to be remembered. They're part of this, and this government, Conservative Party, they're involved. Canadians are no longer peacekeepers. We're involved with combat. But you know, I'm going to ask you the question. So the publisher of the North Shore News, that's the area of North Vancouver, he was the moderator, and he was the one who decided which questions were to be included or not. Mm. And both times he read mine, and he didn't read it out. So since the candidates didn't answer the questions, I'm going to ask you the question.
Oh, okay. And I'm not even running for office. But here we go. Here's the practice in case I decide to.
You have the honorary office of saving so many animals. So, and that's very noble. So this was the question. Some 10 billion animals are slaughtered in North America each year. Most of these cows, chickens, pigs, and turkeys are raised in cruel factory farm situations. Does your party support strengthening the animal cruelty provisions under the Criminal Code? And if so, what amendments would your party propose? Mm. And so you're the whisper party, and what's your answer?
Well, as I'm honored to be your candidate this election, Kyle, I would commit absolutely to strengthening the animal cruelty provisions under the Criminal Code. It's shocking that they haven't been significantly revised since 1892. I think my constituents and society as a whole in Canada have a strong interest in protecting animals from cruelty. They don't see animals in the same way they did back in 1892 as property. It is absolutely appalling that animal cruelty crimes are still considered property crimes in Canada. So it would change the language of the legislation to reflect the severity of treating sentient animals so cruelly. And I would also deal with all those loopholes, close the loopholes, and change the language to improve conviction rates, because shockingly right now, very few animal abusers are actually convicted under this shameful piece of legislation, and it's appalling that these people get away scot-free, and they could go on to inflict crimes on humans as well. I think there's been enough evidence that's interconnected. So absolutely would strengthen the animal cruelty provisions under the Criminal Code. And your second question?
Well,
was
the second question, was there another question? Anyway, so you know what? You've got my vote.
I get your vote. That's wonderful. Thank you very much.
But we've only got a couple of minutes left here. And but I'd like to maybe, if you could explain what the Universal Declaration of Animal Welfare, UDAW, what is that?
What
Maybe
is that?
Explain that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Our organization has been leading work to achieve this at the United Nations. It's our hope that there would be such thing as a Universal Declaration on Animal Welfare voted on at the United Nations General Assembly. And basically what this means is it's quite simple. It would mean that nations around the world understand that animal welfare is important for a variety of reasons, that animals matter to people around the globe, and that we should be working towards improving their protection and their welfare. And it would be a non-binding declaration, but what we've seen in the past with other similar declarations is it usually provides a catalyst for change, and it would be up to the countries that sign this declaration to choose what they would do in their own with their own national governments to improve protection for animals. But it would certainly make it an issue that's worthy of consideration. So we've been advocating in Canada to try to get the Canadian government support for this declaration, and we asked that of all the party leaders as well, if they would support this in principle, because naturally the declaration would change, the text of it would change as more countries sign on to it and seek amendments. So we're asking them to first sign on in principle and then participate to ensure that there is a strong declaration that supports the recognition that animals are sentient, deserve our consideration and respect.
Thank you, Melissa. And in closing, could you just wrap up and maybe summarize very briefly about Vote for Animals, your webpage?
Sure. Well, the World Society for the Protection of Animals is making animal welfare an election issue through our Vote for Animals campaign. Go to www.voteforanimals.ca to see how the parties have responded to our questions about key federal animal welfare issues in the country.
Well, thank you, Melissa, and we'll be looking forward to the fact that one day this animal issue will be prominent as the environment in Canada. Thank you for doing
that as well. Thanks so much.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Yes, and we've been listening to Melissa from the World Society for Protection of Animals. It's called WSPA. A lot of people just say WSPA. It's WSPA.ca. Well, you're listening to Animal Voices coming to you on CFRO Radio 102.7 FM in Vancouver. And Animal Voices webpage is animalvoices.org. And most of our programs are posted on our webpage. Yes, Alan, we have Conrad Schmidt in our studio here, but just before we get on, we're going to be talking about strategic voting and what's in the Georgia Strait and many other issues which is relevant to the election. Do we have just a little touch of music, Alan? Well, Alan, thank you for that light-hearted, tap-toeing kind of music. And Marge, our co-host, you have a few announcements.
Yes,
and then we'll be back to Conrad Schmidt from the Workers Party.
Right. I'd like to suggest that you get a pen or pencil and paper ready, because you might want to write down some of the information about these important announcements. They're action alerts from the Vancouver Humane Society. And the first one is of particular interest to teachers. There's going to be a sowing seed workshop on humane education on October the 24th. If you know a teacher who might be interested, please pass the information along. The Vancouver Humane Society is sponsoring a workshop for humane education a workshop by the Humane Education Institute called Sowing Seeds. The workshop will offer teachers help with introducing effective and transformative humane education programs. Educators can learn new activities that teach critical thinking about irrelevant issues of human rights, animal protection, environmental preservation, the media, and consumerism. Now, the workshop will be held on October the 24th. Now, I believe that is a Sunday. Is it a Saturday or a Sunday? Can somebody check? From 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. That's October the 24th. And for more information, you can call Amy Morley at 207-667-1025. Now, the second announcement I'd like to make is from the BC SPCA. Now, this one sounds like a bit of fun for people who are dog lovers. And this is the event is people who are single and have pets are welcome to bring their dog to an event which is called Must Love Dog Mixer. Okay, Must Love Dogs Mixer. Now, the event is going to be on Wednesday, November the 12th, and that's the event is going to welcome local seniors who love animals, they're invited to mix and mingle at the BC SPCA's first ever Must Love Dogs cocktail party at the Coast Plaza Hotel and Suites, which is downtown Vancouver. And guests are encouraged to bring their four-legged furry friends and enjoy a glass of wine and appetizers while partaking in various fun
Why don't we?
Yeah. Okay, surveys have shown that the majority of dog guardians would stop dating someone if they did not get along with their pet. So this goes along with your song, Carl. Our Must Love Dogs event is an opportunity for like-minded people to get together and share the experience with their best furry friend. Now, I want to give you a brief idea of the activities that will go on. They include small group speed dating sessions presented by the Rendezvous Club, a dating game hosted by It's Just Lunch, and matchmaking icebreakers engineered by well-known dog psychologist Dr. Stanley Coren. So that should make for a very interesting evening, I would think. There will also be a fashion show featuring pet attire from Barking Babies, free appetizers for dogs courtesy the Three Dog Bakery, a silent auction, and amazing raffle ticket prizes, including two return tickets to London. So they're getting lots of support for this fundraiser.
Okay.
Now, let me just...
November 12th.
November the 12th, 7 p.m. at the Coast Plaza Hotel, which is on Comox Street in Vancouver, 1763 Comox. Now, the ticket price is $100 each, but there is a portion of that that you will get a tax receipt for, a $55 receipt. So you can reserve your tickets after October the 15th, and here's a telephone number, 604-681-7271. Okay.
Thank you much. So. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's great. Fun events. And that's what we're talking about here today with Conrad Schmidt on Animal Voices. Well, Conrad, it's a great privilege that you came in today and come into studio, even though you have such a busy schedule.
It's always an honor to be over here with you in the studio.
Now, you had a special subject here. Maybe was it to be lower consumer, eating lower in the food chain?
Yeah, just to touch on that last conversation, is that it's so important to eat. The real issue on animal rights has to be about our diets. It's not just about transportation. We have to start eating lower down on the food chain. The idea of all this energy and food going into raising cattle, what is it, 70% of all grain gets fed to cattle and something like 60% of all corn? And that's how it connects to the ideas that I'm talking about, is that all this work in growing corn and feeding it to animals and then sending them off to be slaughtered, it's extremely labor intensive. But if we eat lower down, there's less labor to go, there's less surplus labor, so people have more leisure time, and the better part is it's healthier. People are not supposed to be eating so much meat, but I'm sure these are ideas that you're all very, very well aware of.
No, we love repeating them. We always say a message has to be repeated at least 7 times till people act on it.
And I think you're already on 7,000, Carl,
yeah,
on that one.
But, Diana Jewell always used to say, and you never know when it's the 7th time. So, but I would like to maybe you could comment on what happened as the All Canada's meetings yesterday in North Vancouver. There was 2 of them I went to. And in one of them, where there was some 200-300 people, there was maybe 2 youths there, the disillusionment of the youth. And you're talking about community and becoming involved in a community that is politically astute. Mm-hmm. So why aren't we seeing more young people in becoming involved? Is there a deeper disillusionment here with the existing? I don't understand it.
There's multiple reasons why this has been happening. It's been happening ever since, say, the 1950s, where particularly the youth and their children are becoming less involved in things that are happening in their community. And what we're learning is it has a lot to do with our values and the way that we're organizing and building our cities. These days, it's so difficult for people to meet their neighbors, meet friends, get involved in community, and kids are getting more and more swallowed up into playing TV games and watching television, and they live in many cases suburbs when there's walls around them, and that's not the way it used to be. Neighborhoods used to be places where people lived as communities, and that's how you create community that gets more involved and can do stuff. And there's the real issue. But also, I think there's a big, even myself, I wouldn't know which party to vote for these days. When they say vote strategically, and I say strategically, but all of the parties are talking about continuous industrial growth, which quite simply, mathematically, is complete nonsense. It's not possible. So I personally wouldn't know which one to vote for.
But you do have solutions to this, because there's things that people can get involved with to be having gardens and community
exactly.
gardens and stuff.
And, I better add that last part. And that's one of the reasons why I created the Workless Party. So you would have a party that said, okay, continuous industrial growth isn't an option. And we are running in the federal elections as well. We're running the incredible Betty Creswick.
Yay!
I think something there. There's no question what you're saying about young people getting less involved over the last generation or two, as in the last 20, 30, 40 years. But at the same time, there are some interesting changes going on, I think, through the world of the internet. And I think what we're seeing is a lot of young people getting in touch with the world in a different way than they did, and communications happening between young people through the internet. And it's interesting that in the state, the American election going on now, the Obama people are very onto this, and they're getting into all the internet sites that young people are using, mm-hmm. and getting the messages out. And some of the parties in this country also are starting to get into that. Some of the major federal parties. But more than the parties in this country, it's organizations. Like we just heard about voteforanimals.com, and mm-hmm. there's voteforenvironment.com, which is very worth looking up. And this is a national movement, Vote for Environment. Like they've had like over 1 million people hit their site since they went up a few weeks ago, and it's attracting people who are media savvy, who aren't plugged into the mainstream media sources of information, mm-hmm. but who are into the internet, into the digital world. And I think this is starting to make a difference and an impact, and it's going to be interesting to see how this evolves.
Yes, it is. I agree with you. I'm following it keenly. And
In the Georgia Strait today, sorry, you have a question, Marge?
I do have a question, yeah. I was really interested in hearing you talk about women's rights and population growth and the inverse relationship between the two. I think that a human population, of course, we all recognize that we are basically the problem in destroying the environment, at least I think we do, mostly do.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed hearing you say that women's rights would make a big difference to the population growth.
To many, many things. It's not just population. It's a lot of values. In countries where women are designated, the whole idea is that they're lower class citizens and their role is to breed. Well, yeah, you have very high levels of population in those countries. As soon as they are equal members of a community, women know how many children that they want and how many that they can raise and how much resources are there for them. And as soon as that is no longer just a male patriarchal decision, more children, more glory.
I don't know that it's only in the underdeveloped countries, frankly. I think mm-hmm. it's in all countries, isn't mm-hmm. it?
Yeah, to varying degrees.
Yeah.
Now, can we... I know I'd like to actually present this question to Alan and to you, Conrad. We're speaking with Conrad Schmick from the Workless Party and author of Workers of the World Relax. Is strategic voting... What is strategic voting, and why is the Georgia Strait making such a headline issue of it here?
I personally think the Georgia Strait is wasting their time. Mother Nature doesn't care where you put your cross. As far as she's concerned, continuous industrial growth is not an option. And when all the parties seem to want to talk about continuous industrial growth, well, unless you can convince Mother Nature it's possible, I think it's a wasted vote. Sorry, that's just how I feel on the topic.
It's okay. It's good. Alan, strategic voting. And this is quite a critical thing that people have to decide. What is strategic voting?
Well, I can't disagree with what Conrad is saying, of course. Nonetheless, there are a number of issues on the table, like the war in Afghanistan, for instance, and other things that the Canadian government has committed the Canadian people to. There's all kinds of social issues and other environmental issues that we can do work on while we work towards, you know, the ultimate change in the social values that you're talking about. So there is some reason to vote for people who you think do have a really progressive point of view and are going to fight for issues you think are really important when they get to Ottawa. So I think you should, you know, I'm really glad the Workless Party is doing what they're doing, getting the word out there and running an election so the word gets out to more than it would otherwise. And hopefully some people will vote for the Workless Party too. I mean, I don't think you have a candidate in my riding, but if you did, I'd have to think about it. In the election for mayor, I will think about it. But nonetheless, the point is that I think it is important for people to consider those other issues. The Harper government we have now, as far as I'm concerned, is a disaster in many, many ways. And it's not as though the opposition is going to be a huge lot better, but there's going to be some changes and some issues that.
Well, you see, the way I look at it is the different parties, what they're all talking about is different strategies to grow the economy. The underlying issue is growth. They have different ideas. Some parties think, well, you invade other countries, you take their resources, that's their idea of growth. Other parties might say something else. But as long as the fundamental is that they're putting on the table is these different strategies for the same thing. It's the same thing. How do we grow the economy indefinitely? That's not an option.
Well, let me just... thanks for your answers here, Alan and Conrad. But I'd like to just turn the table on another issue which I don't think has received full light, and that's, of course, Canadian involvement in Afghanistan. And that was a very interesting issue that the day before George Bush signed the $700 to $800 billion payout for the corporations, he vetoed a welfare bill for $54 billion. So they don't have money for the people, but they do have money to bank out their own people. And just I know we only got about 30 seconds left here, and I just want to just say one thing about the Conservative Party, that if they'd been in power when George Bush invaded Iraq, the Conservative Party agenda indicates that Canada would have joined the United States invading forces into Iraq under the pretext of destroying weapons of mass destruction. Now, under the pretext of building schools, hospitals, and bridges in Afghanistan, Canada has become deeply involved in combat activities. And
90% of the Canadian money is going into the military. Only 10% is going into that schools and stuff. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we are literally out of time, so you have to...
Well, Conrad, thank you for being on Animal Voices, Marge and Alan, and you've been listening to Animal Voices.
Activities aimed at breaking the ice. Now, if you're a dog lover and you're single, you'll have at least two things in common with everyone at the event.
You know, Marge, that reminds me of Virginia's song, which she used to do, a 1930s song, which said something like this. It says, if your dog likes my dog and my dog likes your dog,